FBI Studios. This is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Roth. Last week, you heard the first hour of my conversation with the legendary Jim Clementi. This week, I'm picking up right where we left off. Jim is leaning towards inexperienced and unsophisticated killers, while I'm struggling to see things from his point of view. In this next hour, we dig even deeper to see if we can get onto the same page. This is Season 12, Episode 10, Jim Clementi, Part 2.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that he did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just say you're sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
They screwed up. They were interrupted. The plan was bad and the execution was bad.
I think so. I came to a different conclusion, and I'll certainly default to yours. But
no, but I want to hear it.
The difference is the way that we see. A lot of it depends on, did that wheelbarrow move with her in it or not? What I see is what could to me indicate someone who was pretty criminally sophisticated is Vicky's shot point blank, execution style. John's shot very close inside. So if the intention was and the plan was to kill these two people, burn the house down, they did it pretty effectively. They eventually through the X-rays found bullets, but they did this pretty effectively. The way they lit the fires, there's no accelerant by the bodies, none of that. So if they got interrupted, say in a scenario where then Becky interrupted them, either pulls in, walks in on it, or is upstairs in her room. They don't know because she was supposed to work that night. Hears gunshots, comes downstairs and finds them. Either way, she interrupts from them. She becomes something that wasn't part of the plan. Say in a scenario, she's running out of the house and say they shoot her in the path between the house and where the wheelbarrow's at. She dies right there. But maybe there was a struggle in the house and they're like, well, we've left forensics on her. Quick, throw her in the barrel, light that, because there's people coming now. Light her on fire to burn off any hair or DNA and get out of here. Which would be, at that point, they've given up on, since she wasn't part of the plan, this being an attempt to hide the fact that there was a crime. At that point, they're trying to just hide forensics, dump her in there, throw some gas on her, get rid of the gas can and get out of there. And, ultimately, in reality, it took police 10 years to make an arrest. So they were effective in concealing, not that there was a crime, but in concealing who committed the crime. But that now, if you're rolling her back in from the back, that changes things, certainly, because that's because I can't, the person that is in my mind very carefully setting the fire, who would know, if someone who knows the response time for emergency services, even though the fire department's only 4 miles away, knows that it's going to take them 20, 25 minutes to get there. They set the small fire so they have time to escape. Why does that person roll the body in from all the way out and then stop 70 feet short?
But there's two people.
Right.
And look, one could have been taking care of shooting the mom while the other one was chasing after Becky.
Right.
Because she rolled in at just the wrong time.
Right.
But where do they go? Where do these bad people go?
Good question.
There's no four-wheeler tracks, right? There's no, two sets of footprints walking away from the house into the wilderness. There isn't very much in terms of avenues of escape other than that dirt road, right? Coming up the hill.
Yeah. I mean,
there's a few different ways to get around the neighborhood.
Yeah. It's spread out where you could get it on foot. You could get around, but I don't think they left in a vehicle. You've got, by the time Tim Summerlee calls 911, he was at least the fifth caller. The neighborhood's on alert. And in the canvassing, none of the neighbors saw a car driving away anywhere down Alpine Road either way. So
how far away, like how far away would they have had to hide their vehicle in order to have that be seen?
I would say safely, probably a mile down the hill, which wouldn't take much to get, you know, to get down the dirt roads, get in behind everybody, get in the vehicle and go. You've seen like the aerial photo of the neighborhood. It's really spread out there. There's also, and I haven't even discussed this yet. It seems kind of crazy. But my next trip up there, I want to test it because I don't even know if it's possible. But apparently back in that national forest, there's a road back there almost to the mountains that goes through the peaks and actually drives all the way down the mountain, takes you into Cathedral City, all the way down in the valley.
Really?
I don't know if it's passable. I want to go out there and see if it is passable. But I was told that road's back there and it's something to consider. But again, it comes down, as far as the sophistication level, if it comes down to we're trying to hide the fact there was a crime, they screwed up bad. If it comes down to we're just trying to cover up any forensic evidence, John and Vicky, if they just walked in and shot him, they may not have touched him. They may not have, and they're just worried about, I don't know, any fingerprints or anything like that. But if there was Becky's foot indicates there was some kind of struggle there, the missing shoe, if it was just to quick douse her, because then they took the time to either take the accelerant with them or to move it back into the house or into the garage, wherever it was. They didn't just leave that out there, nothing with their fingerprints on it. There were no fingerprints on the gas cans they found, none of them that were useful.
Right, but if they emptied it and they carried it away with them, you know, that would show that it was, you know, a little more organized. But this crime is not showing a high level of sophistication or experience, you know,
mm-hmm.
committing crimes like this. But I'm also, I don't know, I'm not seeing a lot of maturity either. You know, this is, you know, the target being, or the person that's dealt with in the most extreme is 18 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
What are her risk factors?
So from what I wrote there on the summary, she actually has more than they seem small, but the risk factors, there's a lot of them. You know, she had, you know, as an arson investigator, I'm always looking for what changed. She broke up with her boyfriend about 2 or 3 days before this. There were rumors that she was involved with some people that were involved with some gang members in Indio. The only thing that was really substantial about that was another ex-boyfriend. She had gone to their house a month or so before this and was sitting down with the kid's mom eating, and her phone kept ringing, and the mom says that she was crying, and she said, what's wrong? And she said, these people won't leave her alone. They keep calling her and mention these gang members. So that's a potential risk factor, but that's also one of those things that the rumors get rolling around. I don't know how far there is with that.
Well, I mean, let's talk about that for a second. This family didn't have a lot of money, right?
Right.
One thing that's missing is her purse. But she's an 18-year-old, you know? I mean, you do all this shit to steal, you know, somebody's purse?
Right.
She's involved or knows gang members. What are they doing there? Selling meth? You know, selling pot and meth and crack? I mean, how do they benefit from this?
Right.
Why do they bring a triple homicide heat down on them? I don't know. I'm just not feeling gang activity.
I don't either. No, I don't think so. So she had the boyfriend she broke up with. She had also just recently started talking to another ex-boyfriend who had a girlfriend, but they were talking. In fact, he had planned to go up and hike with her. He says that he canceled the hike. But that's just his word.
Wait, at that moment, at that time?
Well, earlier in that evening, which the whole thing is a little weird because it was like pitch black out that night by 7:30. He worked till 6:30. down in the valley, and she was supposed to be to work at 9. But he confirmed that there was that she had asked him to come up and hike, and there's phone records. Yeah,
didn't you, was there something summary about that?
Yeah,
she was going to be hiking with somebody else.
Yeah, he says that she told him that there was going to be another, because it was supposed to be like platonic. He has a girlfriend. They're talking. He says that it was, you know, he got on the phone with her. He didn't really want to go hiking. And she says, oh, there's this other guy up here that I'm going to be with. And he's like, I didn't want to deal with the drama. And so I said, no, I'm not going to go up and go hiking.
Oh, wait, I'm a little confused though. But so she broke up with her boyfriend a few days before, and then she starts talking to him and asks him to go on a hike with her and somebody else.
Yeah. But so she breaks up with boyfriend A. Boyfriend B that she's talking to now, the day of the, you know, the weekend leading up to this crime, they had broken up 8 months earlier, back in January.
Okay.
And then she wanted him to come up and have go hiking with her. Then she said there was some other guy she was going to be hiking with, that was going to be up there too. And he says that he just canceled and didn't go up.
And she never identified who this other person was.
No, not to him on the phone. He said he had some assumptions about maybe it was another boyfriend, or he thought she'd been dating some guy from the 29 Palms base or something, but wasn't sure. So you have that boyfriend. You have the one she just broke up with. You've got just recently before this, she had evidently slept with a coworker's husband, and there was an incident at work. There was kind of an argument between her, obviously, and the coworker, who was upset that she'd slept with her husband.
Can kind of understand that.
There was an altercation at work, which we haven't even talked about this on the podcast yet, but there was another altercation a couple days before this where it was reported that it was that ex-boyfriend B, the one from January, the older, but it wasn't him. It was actually a friend or roommate of the boyfriend she had just broken up with a couple days before that came to her work at Denny's and was screaming and yelling at her. He had to be asked to leave the restaurant. So she had a lot going on.
Wait, so he was screaming and yelling at her for breaking up with the other guy?
I don't know. It's not documented what the altercation was about. It was just that was him. That's who it was, and that he was there, and they were arguing. That was like the Friday. Okay. This happened on Sunday, the Friday before. So she's got all that going on as far as risk factors. John, I've had a hard time identifying any real risk factors from him. We listened to a half hour long interview with his boss, or not, he's an independent contractor, but he did a lot of work for this property management company, and just nice guy, came to work.
Yeah, but the questions I have about him, you know, basically in the summary, you say that one, he's, you know, he's making 60, 70 grand from this one client, and mm-hmm. he has other clients, and his only expenses are really $700 for a mortgage, and that's it.
Yeah.
No car loans or anything, but he never had any money. So money's going somewhere.
Right.
And is that money going to a drug or alcohol problem or gambling? I mean, is the casino nearby that, you know, he's always at or something? I mean, nothing like that.
I was asking those exact same questions as, you know, we're usually looking for drugs or gambling when money's bleeding out somewhere. We heard some of the kids had said that he would occasionally smoke pot with the kids behind the house. They used to go back in that. As a matter of fact, speaking of the footprints, I don't remember. I think I mentioned this report, but some of the friends said 2 days before this that they had been walking around back there with Becky in behind the house. But in his autopsy, he had no drugs at all were detected in his system. So I don't know about that. There's no evidence that he had any kind of gambling issue. Sounds like everybody said he got off work and went back home and stayed there. Doesn't mean he couldn't have, but there's no indication that he did have a gambling issue. But he also wasn't, you know, he had tax liens. It seems like he wasn't super organized. You know, he didn't have a bank account. He'd get his checks and cash them. And he owed money back child support, and he owed money for tax liens. So he was always kind of trying to avoid paying those things. And then you have Vicky. The only risk factor for Vicky is the one that there's a, you can see a real direct correlation is that her ex-husband was fighting, having to pay her $175,000 from his pension that got, you know, put into the divorce decree 15 years earlier or whatever it was. And now he finally retired, and now he was fighting having to pay that. And according to John's ex, her boyfriend's ex, who was pretty friendly with Vicky, she had a pretty cantankerous relationship with the ex. It was pretty violent, not physically violent, but you know, a lot of screaming and yelling. They hated each other, and now he was fighting paying this money. So that one jumped out at me, obviously, because...
And is that Becky's dad?
That's Becky's dad, yeah. So that one, you know, that was one where you could very clearly say, well, if she's alive, he's out 175 grand. If she's dead, he's not out anything.
Yeah. But I'm very reluctant to see Becky's dad burning her in a wheelbarrow.
Right.
To me, that's a real... He would have to be a pretty major psychopath to be doing that. I mean, you know, let's say if the wheelbarrow was heading into the woods, you know, and the offender was trying to bury her, you know, or something, but got interrupted and decided to burn her. I just don't see it. I just don't see that.
I haven't ruled it out because of exactly it's his kid. But then I think, as what I said on the show the other day, is I can't rule anything out that a parent wouldn't do to their kid, because we've seen parents do so many things to their kids.
But was his relationship with Becky that bad? I mean,
it seems like it wasn't good. There's a little indicator we have there is, so after her parents divorced when she was young, Vicky dated a guy named Chuck for, I don't know, a year or two. We don't really know exactly how long before John. And then she'd been with John for the next 10 years after that. At one point, Becky in her senior year of high school moved out of the house and didn't go live with her dad, but went and lived with Chuck and went to a different school for her senior year of high school. You know, it's nothing concrete, but I found it interesting that the person she went to go live with was not her father, who also lived down, you know, away from Pinyon Pines, but she went down to go live with her mom's ex-boyfriend. I don't know what and her older sister, Tiffany, also lived with Chuck, and really, till the day he died, which was in 2020, saw him as kind of a father figure.
Bob, this is a really screwed up case. Let me put it this way. I'm not 100% convinced that Becky is the target, but I am. Her treatment is different enough that it's a real probability. There just isn't enough behavior around the mother, other than the fact that she was shot kind of execution style, to make me think that she might be the target. And, you know, and the same with John, like, they're just dispatched, and not, you know, it's not like the head was smashed with a cinder block or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't seem to be a tremendous amount of anger and all that there. No accelerants put on their body, you know, but with Becky, I mean, it's a pretty offensive thing that was done to her, and they spent more time with her body than they spent with the other bodies. Mm-hmm. So I'm leaning that way as her being the target, but I still think that they were interrupted, that they didn't get to do everything they wanted to do, but because that fire, you know, had attracted the neighbor's attention, and, you know, they could, you know, I mean, I hear fire engines where I live at the top of a hill, and I hear them a couple of miles away, you know, and I live in a big city, like in the middle of nowhere at 9 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. Fire engine siren, you know, probably stands out.
Right. Yeah. I would think if he was running the siren and not just lights, that you would have heard it from that distance.
Yeah.
Just because it's so, I've been up there at night and it's just so still and quiet and dark. And
how about
there.
The visibility? Speaking of that, is there any visibility of the down south, down the hill towards the fire department?
I'm going to have to check that, to be honest. I was sitting there this whole time. I've been thinking it'd be worth checking out. I don't remember looking from the house out towards the south and seeing like a huge expanse of, you know, because there's some creosote trees and stuff up there. But it does, the neighborhood does generally slope down to Highway 74. So it would seem possible that you could see it, but I don't recall seeing that far from the house. But I'll have to check that and see if you could see the lights coming. But certainly you would notice the car coming pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, it's coming from pretty close by, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So once they came up Chillen Heights Road. When they came up that road, which would be, if you're facing from the house out to the road just to the left, maybe a quarter mile, you would have, you know, seen that those headlights coming for sure.
Right. And you said there's no moon in the sky at this point.
Right.
And you know, yeah, I mean, when you're out camping in the middle of nowhere and a car comes by, you can hear that gravel crunching mm-hmm. from pretty far away, and you can certainly see the lights.
Right. Yeah, the whole thing is just super perplexing to me. I had kind of the same impression you had at first. I've started leaning away from that, because to me at first it seemed like a big clusterfuck that they just didn't know what they were doing. And then as I was working through different scenarios, how it could have played out, it's like, well, it could have been not that much of a cluster. It could have been pretty, you know, if the plan was shoot them both, light the house on fire with two small fires, slide out of there, and you're down the road and gone before anybody notices the fire. It's a pretty good plan. But then
Becky shows up,
and then there's a struggle with her. She runs, you know, I still think she, the other thing with the wheelbarrow, there's no tracks for the wheelbarrow going out, only in.
Right. That's why I was asking if it was out there. In other words, you said that they used to smoke pot out there.
Uh-huh.
Is there, you know, did they collect up logs and make a bonfire? What did they do? You know, I don't know. But the wheelbarrow could have been sitting there where it is, as you said, and they could have just dumped her in it and said, let's just light her on fire and get the fuck out of here.
Right. And then, you know, in that scenario, as I said, where I was leaning very different from you was that if me looking at it as someone who say is smarter, there's a few factors that play in. I guess I'll just kind of break down what I see is it seems to me that a good possibility is that the offender has an idea of the delayed response to that location. They have a pretty good idea of fire behavior and how to burn a house down while setting fire small enough to give you time to escape. They know enough about forensics to know that if there was a struggle with Becky, that by quickly lighting her on fire, she doesn't have to burn completely away. They just need to burn their evidence off of her. If that's how it went down, which it could be a completely different scenario, but if that's how it went down, then I lean towards someone who maybe is a little more mature and calculated, because it's like, if that's the case, right? Becky interrupts them. Now you're talking about somebody who's thinking very quick on their feet. How, oh shit, that wasn't part of the plan. And I just tackled her. My DNA is all over her. Somebody's coming. Put her in the barrel, light her on fire, and let's get out of here.
All right. But let's talk about that though. What did they actually accomplish? So you're talking about a hit? I mean, we have to kill these people and then burn down the house? Like, are they really at that great a risk for that? It seems like an outrageous thing for, you know, this community that, right. You know, I'm just making an assumption here, but I doubt that there's a lot of double homicides in this community. And people are there because they're trying to be away off the grid and just in peacefulness, and it's quiet, and, you know, there aren't loud parties, nobody's cooking meth, whatever. I don't know. But if that's the case, what did that crime accomplish? Just set her aside, set Becky aside. What did this crime accomplish in murdering those two people? You know, they're in their 50s. They're, you know, they're quiet. They do their jobs and they come home. What is it that caught it? It wasn't just a home invasion that, you know, they just decided, hey, I'm going to break in here, do nothing but kill these people, and then take off. I mean, you did mention that John might have said to somebody that they're coming into some money soon. But again, like, who did he tell that to that was then going to get this information to some people who wanted to come in and just kill them and burn down the house? Was there, there's no indication that they were tied up and asked questions and tried to find the safe or anything like that.
Right.
It just seems like they were just practical kills with the slight indication that maybe mom was executed. But if she, you know, tried to take off and was cornered trying to open the back door, you know, and she's shot in the head, what is the goal of the offenders here? And how is that exhibited in behavior? Man, I mean, there just doesn't seem to be a lot of it. You know, killing them and then burning the house seems to be like, well, that's how I'm going to try to cover up killing them. Not right. A good job, not an effective job, because they left metal things inside their bodies mm-hmm. that weren't part of them. And then outside, you got her burning in a wheelbarrow when the neighbor shows up. Like, it's a very bizarre thing. But then you have the neighbor saying, I looked into the garage. And then you have the fire department, right? You said the fire department came and it was closed.
The captain says he doesn't recall if it was closed when he pulled up. He doesn't remember. But we know it was closed at some point because the fire department cut a hole in it with the chainsaw. In my experience, that could be a number of things. Those doors, you know, they can, you know, a big draft, those tilt type doors can cause them to close. Possible, like if the accelerant in front of the door ignited quickly.
But did it have a garage door opener? No. Or it was a manual thing?
Manual. It was one of the solid doors that tilts, not a sectional. Mm-hmm. I've also seen one thing I've considered, and the problem is the fire chief or the fire captain just didn't have a lot of memory of that, was, you know, one of the things we do as firefighters, once a fire starts to get under control, is we do is called pull ceiling. Get these big big poles with hooks on the end. You pull ceiling down, make sure there's no hot spots left. It's possible that garage door was tilted up, covering the ceiling. In order to pull the ceiling, they would have closed it. And then, because they didn't just cut a little access hole, they cut the whole door out, just left the frame. It could have been shut by the firefighters later, cut open, so they could get inside ceiling to pull ceiling. That's a possibility. He wasn't helpful. The captain wasn't helpful with the garage door.
Wow.
Or it could be, like you said, the killers were still inside and they, but then you got to ask yourself, why make the noise of closing the door, which would also slow down your fire by closing the garage door? Why not just leave?
Yeah, you know that, but closing the garage door might prevent somebody from running inside and seeing the people with the bloody heads and chests. I don't know.
Yeah. But in that scenario you just talked about, when you said we walked through, okay, forget Becky for a minute and just look at the purpose of, you know, what was accomplished. And that's why when looking at her victim, Vicky's victimology or their victimology, the only thing, and I'm not saying this is necessarily the case, but the one thing that was accomplished by that is that Vicky's ex-husband no longer had to pay $175,000.
Yeah, which is a real motive. So obviously you need to find out where the ex-husband was at that time.
Right.
You know, I mean, and, you know, and or whether or not that person, that ex-husband was in communication with anybody who might have done this for him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Obviously that, you know, when you're talking about investigative avenues, that is certainly a real viable avenue.
Right.
Obviously I know nothing about where he lives or works or plays. I mean, he could be on the other side of that neighborhood or on the other side of that road. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But that's something that you should check out.
I was going to say, once you're done with that thought, let's flip the script and say Becky was the target and walk through that.
Yeah. So, and that's why I'm saying, because I don't know of anything that was accomplished other than that $175,000, I'm not putting a high priority on the probability that the older folks were the target. Again, if it was just them, I would be struggling to figure out a motive.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see Becky getting this strange and extreme treatment, the other ones were killed and they were left inside a house, and the house was lit on fire. Becky was killed and she was dumped in a wheelbarrow, you know, left hanging out in a wheelbarrow, and she was, an accelerant was poured on her and she was burned up. It's kind of displaying the body versus leaving the body where it drops. They spent more time with her body than with the other bodies. They spent more effort on her body than with the other bodies. All those things are indicating to me she was more important than the other two. And so that's why I would say that there's a more of a probability that we're talking about somebody who targeted her. Now, what kind of problems does an 18-year-old get into? Yeah, she could be hanging out with gang members who want to teach her a lesson for doing something wrong. Could be unrequited love. It could be, you know, the boyfriend who just broke up with her. It could be the girlfriend of the ex-boyfriend that she's talking to again. It could be somebody else totally different who is in love with her and now that she's free wants her and she doesn't want him. Mm-hmm. You know, those are all possibilities. And my feeling, and I have to go with my gut on this, is that she's the target. And it has something to do with her and the scenarios I just gave you. You know, 3 out of 4 of those have to do with her love life.
So what is accomplished by, is it just crime of passion? Just, I'm mad, so I'm going to kill her and her family? Or kill her and then family were witnesses, so then...
Yeah, well, probably doesn't have, this doesn't show a tremendous amount of knowledge with respect to her schedule, because her coming back home was not planned, right? She shouldn't have been here.
Right. Or, and even if we, even if that call didn't happen, she was still supposed to be at work when this happened, one way or the other.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right. Unless that call was connected somehow to the offender. In other words, did she really leave her shirt home, or was she going to see somebody, or did she plan on meeting someone, or did somebody plan on meeting her? Those are possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In other words, she makes the call to work saying, you want me to come in or you want me to get my shirt and stuff? I'd have to be late. And they said, all right, come on in late.
Yeah. One way, whether it was for the shirt or for a different reason, if the call happened, she was buying time, seems like. Like she was with somebody and wanted to spend more time with them, or was waiting on somebody, or was going to stop somewhere, or it was, you know, she forgot her shirt. But whatever it was, she was, it was to buy herself some time.
Doesn't seem like she was under duress, though, because then she would have said, I have to go back home
right,
and get my shirt, versus, you want me to come in now on time, or do you want me to wait?
Also, she didn't say, I'm not coming in. It was just, you know, if the killer's got a gun to her head calling in, he would probably tell her, say I'm sick and I'm not coming.
Yeah, I'm not coming tonight.
Yeah.
Right.
So
that would delay discovery and all that. But this, look, what did they really accomplish by burning down the house? Not a thing, really. Maybe a delay in figuring out that they were murdered, right? But they didn't accomplish cover-up of the murder. They didn't accomplish a staging that was effective. And again, people stage and people spend time, you know, concealing bodies when there's a known connection to the location or the victim or both, right?
Right. Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
I believe that's an indicator that there's some known connection between, and I believe it is Becky and the killer or killers. I still believe there's more than one that could lean towards the gang. It could lead towards somebody who, you know, was very angry at her and, you know, had somebody come along. I don't know, unless it's gang activity where, you know, you have more than one person in the gang who would do something like this. I don't know. But I go back and I say, I think you have two offenders. I think I'm not seeing a lot of indications of maturity. You know, the body burning in the wheelbarrow, you know, is that some insanity or is that some immaturity? It seems there's no other indication here that somebody was just psychotic and just going on a spree and not thinking or anything like that. But it looks like that when you see the crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that's an indication of immaturity. It was planned. This was planned, but not in a very sophisticated manner criminally. I wouldn't expect that the offender or offenders would have a similar criminal history. I don't think that they've been doing this for a while. Forensically, it's possible that they cleaned up the brass. You know, who cleans up brass, right? People who are, you know, who have, you know, a high degree of forensic sophistication, and so do cops. You know, when you're going through the academy, and this is, cops have died because of this in the line of fire. In other words, they're in the middle of a firefight and they run out of bullets. And instead of just loading and keeping firing, they pick up their brass.
Out of habit,
yeah. And mm-hmm. so we eventually, in the FBI, trained law enforcement never to pick up your brass during shooting. Afterwards, go back and pick it up. Because if you train yourself to boom, 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 pick it up, and then boom, 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 then you're going to do that during a firefight.
So, right.
Anyway, that's one thing. But I don't know that there's any other indication of law enforcement here.
Well, let's talk about planning for a minute. Okay, you mentioned that this was planned, and I agree.
But not very sophisticated.
Right. It was. I lean towards it was planned because there's no indication that the weapons used came from the house. There was no weapons missing from the house.
Right. So they brought their weapons with them,
right,
and they took them away. Right. So that's an organized thing.
It seems almost impossible that they drove there, which is another level of planning, that they either...
Well, that they drove all the way to
right.
the location.
But it's just showing some planning, right? So they
yes.
live close enough to walk, or they were smart enough to park the car somewhere remote and then hike
yes.
in.
Yes.
So I looked at those things, thought, okay, well, this is someone who came there with murder in mind. I don't think this was... And you tell me what you think, but I don't think this was like a crime of passion as on TV where... It wasn't intended, and then something broke bad and something happened. You know, if Becky was the target, she wasn't strangled or she wasn't hit over the head. She was very likely shot. So someone was carrying a gun. But then one thing that I found really interesting, and I don't know anything about that. I just know practically speaking as a hunter, what I think about this. I don't know as far as other crimes you see committed. The shotgun used was loaded with birdshot, which is a terribly awful choice to kill a human with. They're tiny, tiny little BBs. We all remember Dick Cheney shooting a guy in the face, in the neck, with the same type of load. Not a deadly load, unless it's, you know, very, very close. And so it got me to thinking, would someone go buy ammo for this crime and choose bird load? If they did, certainly doesn't show, I mean, shows they don't know what they're doing.
Why wouldn't they get double op buck?
Exactly. Yeah. If you're going to use a shotgun, that's what you see in the Western movies when they shoot them and there's like 12 big holes in their chest. That's double op buck. But they have birdshot. Or is birdshot just what they had around for their shotgun? Mm. In which case, part of what I worked into my profile was, I think that's more likely, which would indicate the person probably is a bird hunter or does sport shooting.
Or shoots varmints in their backyard.
Right, or possibly, yeah, something like that. But someone that has that as a reason to have that kind of load. It's the same load you'd use if you were trap or skeet shooting, or if you were pheasant hunting, or not even duck. You'd use a heavier load for like duck, but for like pheasant or quail or something, or varmints in the backyard.
Or Dick Cheney's friends.
Right, if you're trying to shoot one of Dick Cheney's friends in the neck, then that would be the load you would choose. So that's something that I considered.
And what did you determine? That this was probably, you know, somebody from the area there? Or
I couldn't go that far, but I went as far as to think that we have two people with two different levels of maturity or sophistication, because then the other guy's got a 40 caliber pistol, which anyone can have. But the fact that they
determine the type of pistol yet?
No, they said they thought it probably came from a Glock. And I guess they could tell that from striations.
Yeah, you should be able to.
Yeah. So they said they believed it came from a Glock 40 cal, but they said it could be 40 caliber or 10 millimeter, which are almost identical.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're the same. 40 caliber is about 10 millimeters, and the bullet was pretty deformed.
Yeah, but, okay. But either one means that it could be an FBI agent, because we used to use 10 millimeter Smith & Wessons and then got transferred to the 40 caliber Glock.
Mm-hmm. So with that person, as far as behaviors that I see, they held the gun to her head and pulled the trigger.
This is Vicky.
Vicky. And that's where I want to rely on your expertise a little bit. Me, it seems like you see that shit on TV, but that's it's a hell of a thing to put a gun to someone's head and without hesitation and pull the trigger, you know, pressed against their head.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of what I'd worked into my profile is one of them probably does have some kind of criminal past, someone who maybe has killed before, or somebody who, and I don't know if you see that, you know, if it's a normal, if you see that with just, you know, average, ordinary, everyday offenders that will press a gun against somebody's head.
Well, yeah, it could be someone who has some criminal sophistication that way, or some other experience. You know, if I go back to the DC sniper case, right?
Mm-hmm.
The reason why we thought that at least one of these offenders was somebody who had police or military training and experience.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who, you know, it's harder to, as you say, it's harder to pull the trigger on a human than on a target,
mm-hmm.
especially up close and personal. And unless there's a lot of hatred involved, that's even harder when you're talking about killing two women.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I wouldn't say necessarily, because I don't think the job was very well done, unless one of them was a complete screw up and the other one was unable to wrangle that one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's possible that they have police or military training and experience as well.
Make sure you tune in for the final hour of my conversation with Jim Clemente next week on Truth and Justice. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Edited by Kelly Barron's Brink and sound engineered by Shane Yoder. All music for the show was created, composed, and scored by PutThemInASong.com, who also mixed and mastered this episode. All of our fonts across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, TruthAndJusticePod.com, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. And a big thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Kaywood Yomnick, Ginger Fiola, Erica Cantor, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Ford, Courtney Wimberly, and Melissa Cardenas. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in several ways. To financially support the show, the best thing you can do is just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You'll not only be supporting the show, but you'll get something in return. On Patreon, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we have reward levels. For just $5 a month, you get access to ad-free versions of all of our episodes and behind-the-scenes bonus video content every week. Then other reward levels include t-shirts, hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You can also do us a huge favor by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the brands that sponsor this program. If you have a new case you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is to engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page on Facebook. And for all you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. And I can be found personally on all forms of social media @BobRuffTruth.
Don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, or tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, I'm signing off. I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been Truth and Justice.
Say goodbye to the dish and hello to Sky Stream, the new way to get Sky over Wi-Fi. So you can get unmissable Sky shows like The Last of Us and Succession, as well as Netflix and Discovery Plus, and loads more, all in one subscription for £26 a month. Oh, and next day delivery with no upfront fee. Sky Stream, TV simplified. Head to sky.com. Requires Sky Stream and broadband minimum speed, 10 megabits per second, 18-month minimum term. Cut-off times apply for next day delivery. Excludes bank holiday. 18 plus, terms apply.